Hello, welcome to PMM Insight, a plastics, machinery, and manufacturing podcast. This is an episode of PMM in person, where we talk to the most interesting players in the plastics industry. I am your host, Ron Shen, editor of PMM. Our guest today is John Hart, managing director of PNM Corporate Finance, or PMCF, as they are referred to in the marketplace. John is based in Southfield, Michigan, but the firm has 24 offices across the U.S. PMCF is an investment bank providing merger and acquisition advisory services throughout the Americas, Europe, and Asia. John is affiliated with Plante Moran, which is a top professional services firm in the U.S. with a 100-year history. John leads PMCF's Plastics and Packaging Group and also is on the plastics leadership team at Plante Moran. Both Plante Moran and PMCF have a long history serving clients in the plastics industry. In addition to advising clients in company sales, mergers, and acquisitions, PMCF tracks every publicly disclosed plastics transaction globally and provides a monthly and annual report summarizing the activity. PMCF has been publishing this report for more than 15 years, and John is frequently contacted to discuss trends in plastics M&A. So, John, welcome to this podcast. Can you please start by recapping plastics M&A activity in 2023?
Yeah, so Ron, first of all, thanks for having me. This is a real pleasure, and I always love getting together with other plastics professionals and talking about M&A. And so I guess in recapping 2023, it'd be tough for me to even talk about 23 without maybe looking back a couple years prior. And for those of you that, you know, haven't seen our statistics, which, you know, are in a number of the plastics trade periodicals, we also post them on our website. And, you know, happy to include you on our distribution list if you'd like to receive them via email. But we saw an absolute record high plastics M&A activity in 2021. This was following a low period in 2020. We all know what happened in 2020 with COVID. But what was interesting is the year in 2020 started off strong, and then it fell off dramatically for about 6 months. And then we saw this resurgence of M&A that started really in the fourth quarter of 2020 and went all the way through 2021. And I think this was a combination of a number of things, you know, one of which was there was certainly some pent-up demand for M&A going into that year. But the government stimulus coupled with the low interest rates, it was kind of a perfect storm, but a good storm nonetheless. So we saw this record level of M&A. You know, our firm certainly had a record year. Most investment banks had a record year, but the plastics industry, you know, saw a record amount of M&A. And then going into 2022, when we started incurring higher inflation and the Fed started raising interest rates, we saw a pretty significant pullback in M&A that started kind of latter part of the second half of 2022, and then throughout the first part of 2023. So it was higher interest rates, higher cost of debt, you know, banks being cautious on lending on deals, and so the buyers, you know, started pulling back in terms of what they were willing to pay from a multiple standpoint. And that caused sellers to, you know, sit on the sidelines, and there were actually a number of deals that got delayed, you know, during that time period. And so, you know, I think most M&A professionals would look back to that time period and say it was, you know, really a tough time to get deals done. Well, with you know, with kind of the interest rate environment, inflation environment, you know, stabilizing. And I think the macro economic viewpoint by, say, the majority, there's still others that maybe don't share this viewpoint, but people getting comfortable with the stability in the economy, we saw a resurgence of plastics M&A in the second half of 2022, or 2023 rather. And so as I look back on 2023, it's kind of a tale of two halves. You had the first part of the year, still I'd say down and struggling as a result of things I mentioned that started in 2022, but the second half of the year seeing an opening up, a resurgence of M&A activity at pretty pretty nice levels. And just to give you some data to compare the two, in the second half of 2023, we saw 205 transactions globally, compared to 177 in the first half of 23. So a pretty nice increase. And I think that that increase, gives us optimism looking into 2024. We're still not in, the same M&A environment that we were in 2021. And I'd say that the biggest issue there is the cost of debt is much higher today than it was in 2021. I think there's also, maybe still some concerns around the macro economy, and there's company performance factors that are limiting, some transactions in the marketplace. But I was certainly encouraged by that second half performance, and I'm hoping that that momentum continues into 2024. And I'd say on the company performance factor, maybe for folks that aren't as familiar as to how M&A works, you certainly have, macro factors like the economy. You have, debt factors. So if the cost of debt is higher than it was previously, then it costs more money to finance a transaction. So all else being equal, what you're able to pay or maybe willing to pay in a transaction is lower. And so it lowers multiples. Well, as multiples get lower, sellers are less apt to sell because the price is lower. And so the cost of debt and the aggressiveness of lenders, how much they would lend on a deal, has a direct impact on the sale multiples. And the sale multiples drive the seller's willingness to sell. And so the other kind of major factor, and we certainly saw this in 2023, is company performance. So the baseline, most deals have some sort of baseline financial performance that is utilized to value a business. And then the multiple is largely driven by what the either the growth or the risk factors are in that business or a combination thereof. Now, there's certain sectors that drive or command higher multiples, largely due to the fact that there's a viewpoint in the marketplace about the growth or the risk factors within that. So take, for instance, medical. Medical has been and probably will continue to be for a long time period a higher multiple sector than, say, an industrial sector. And I think it's because of the viewpoint of the long-term growth in that sector and the, specialty nature of a lot of aspects of that industry. I think, to most buyers, they view it as a very attractive place to be in. And so that viewpoint by the buyer drives a higher multiple, all else being equal. And so a lot of things going on. I know I'm giving you a lot of information, but I felt like that was important to, set the stage in terms of talking about what happened in 2023. So overall, 2023 was, in the plastics industry, a great year. It's the third highest level of annual deal activity that we've seen since we've been tracking the space in 2005. And I would say if you talk to most M&A professionals that cover sectors beyond just plastics, they would be surprised by that statistic because it didn't feel like a strong year. And it didn't feel like a strong year partly because of, I think, what we were experiencing in the first half of the year. But plastics M&A has actually outperformed kind of other sectors in the second half of the year from what we've been seeing. And we're hoping that's a leading indicator and not necessarily an anomaly. But one of the things that I've learned over many years of doing this is that you can't take one quarter or one half or even 1 year and say, this is the new normal. Plastics M&A is very dynamic and ever changing. And that's why we track these things on a monthly basis, because we're trying to identify, you know, new trends, new things that come out, and so that we can best advise our clients, but also advise the overall industry when we're talking about plastics M&A trends. Is that helpful in recapping 2023?
Absolutely, it was. Thanks a lot. So what role is private equity ownership playing?
Yeah, so very good question, and also a pretty complicated answer. In fact, we have we have an industry event coming up here in the next month or so, where I will be talking about the private equity impact on the plastics industry, and really from a lens of how has it changed the plastics industry. So when I first started covering the plastics industry many years ago in the early 2000s, there was private equity investment, but it was not the majority. In fact, you know, it was really the strategic buyers that were the ones doing most of the deals, and the private equity buyers were certainly in the minority. And, you know, fast forward to today and many, many years, like I was recently put together a chart that went back to just 2010. So in the 2010, you know, compared to now, we've had well over 100 deals per year in private equity in the plastics industry. And last year we had 184, followed by the year prior was 177. And so we're kind of going from a minority. Then we had, say, 2010 to 2018, we were about 38%, close to 40% of the deals were private equity. And now we're approaching 50% of the deals are private equity. So what does that mean? Well, that means that private equity, you know, a private equity owned company is, you're much more apt to have pretty much every sector of plastics to have private equity owned business in the competitive landscape. And so what does that mean if you're just a company participating in that space? Well, you have to understand your competition. So your competition is going to have deeper pockets, aggressive capital, and, you know, typically private equity groups invest in companies to grow them. And so we're seeing a more consolidated, you know, plastics industry today than what we had, say, in the early 2000s and even going back to 2010. And the private equity groups there's a higher number of larger companies in these subsectors. And so a typical playbook for a private equity is to invest in a company, to do some organic growth initiatives, so invest more capital than, say, maybe a private seller would, to accelerate the growth. But then they also do add-on acquisitions, which of that 184, last year saw 114. So 114 of the 184 transactions were add-ons. So they're basically that private equity makes an initial investment in a company. We call it a platform. And then they do an add-on acquisition to that. And a lot of times we'll do multiple add-ons, and then they look to sell it, say, 5 to 7 years later. Some are earlier, some are longer. And so, you know, on average, a private equity group will do about 2 or 3 add-ons in their 5 to 7 year hold cycle. And so that's accelerating the growth, but making it a more substantial company. And then they'll sell it to another private equity group, which will then look to do the same, or they'll sell it to a strategic. And so what we're seeing is really a changing landscape in the plastics industry, more sophisticated companies, better competitors, more heavy investment in technology and innovation, bigger, faster, type players, and in higher growth, businesses. And it's, you know, I think for the smaller players and the independently owned, it makes it, you know, tougher to compete. And that's not to say that private equity is the best vehicle, because certainly I grew up in a family business. I'm a huge believer in family businesses, but just understanding the type of competition that you have and how to compete with them. And I think there's still a role and will always be a role for the family or entrepreneur-owned businesses, but certainly a changing landscape, less fragmented, more sophisticated players, larger players, you know, in the space.
It's easy to see that private equity is playing a bigger part, but I'm astounded to hear how much of a bigger part. That was great. So what are the strongest end markets now in terms of M&A? Is it packaging and medical?
Yeah, so we do track M&A activity by subsector as well as end market. And in 2023, industrial represented about 62% of the M&A activity, and that was up. So that was 235 deals in 2023 compared to 208 in 2022. Oddly enough, we saw a pretty substantial downturn in the industrial sector in 2022 for a lot of the reasons I mentioned before. So we had 268 deals in the industrial end market compared to 208 in 2022. And then, you know, we're seeing a little bit of a rebound in 2023, but not quite to the peak we saw in 2021. So, you know, just given the plastics industry in general, I mean, industrial does make up, you know, the majority of the players. And so M&A, you know, follows suit in terms of you see more deals there. But I'd say industrial is maybe more cyclical of an end market compared to others. So you'll see more of a change in the really strong time periods or the lower time periods in M&A. Medical had a very strong year in 2021, 2022, and 2023, but still is a small percentage of the deals. It's about 10% of the activity that we saw last year, and it's been very consistent. 2021, 2022, you know, within the you know, one or two deals each year. Our firm is currently representing a very niche medical player in the market today. We received a extremely high level of interest from, you know, private equity, from strategic companies, and I think it's indicative of, you know, a supply-demand imbalance, meaning there's more buyers than there are sellers of medical businesses, and that supply-demand imbalance certainly helps a seller, you know, from a valuation perspective. And I think that's part of the reason we see the multiples that we see. Within packaging had a down year last year from an M&A perspective. We do both a plastics M&A report, and then we do a separate packaging report. And in the packaging report, we include paper, we include metal, we include non-plastic packaging, but we also include plastic packaging. And the packaging industry, I would say, you know, it had a down year last year, is, you know, showing signs of some improvement, but the jury's still out in terms of what will happen in 24. And when we talk in generalities about M&A in the plastics industry or the packaging industry, one thing I do want to make clear is a lot of it is subsector specific. You could be in a down M&A market and still get a fantastic outcome in an M&A transaction because you're in a highly desirable niche, or your niche is maybe outperforming the rest of the market. And so, you know, don't take any of these generalities that Ron and I are talking about, you know, as it's a carte blanche applying to all sectors. But packaging in general, you know, did have a down year. And I think that the key things there, outside of some of the macro things I mentioned earlier, you know, the 2021 peak, the 2022 downturn with the inflation, cost of debt, and macroeconomic concerns. Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing that we've seen within the packaging industry is what I would call a post-COVID normalization. I think the packaging industry in general benefited from COVID. You know, some subsectors more than others, but you know, we saw very strong performance in 21, 22. You know, really that started kind of in that latter half of 2020, and you know, in 2023, we started to see, you know, kind of second quarter and on, packaging companies, you know, showing lower performance than what they experienced in 2022, and it's again post-COVID normalization. So you got a lot of companies benefited from COVID, and then it's taken, I think, a while. Obviously, different geographies, the U.S. maybe a little bit different than Europe, but you know, in the U.S., you know, you saw things really start to come back to normal. You know, say middle of 2022, you know, second half of 2022. But 2023 is kind of like that first full year of what I would call, you know, kind of the post-COVID normal. And so people traveling more again, people eating out more. And so you saw, you know, kind of the change in packaging there. So we had this post-COVID normalization. And then in 2022, there were a lot of supply chain issues where people couldn't get goods. You know, or even raw materials. And so there was this overstocking of things with the anticipation that things were going to continue at the higher level. Well, as things kind of ticked down, you had these companies with overstocking, you know, to the demand. And so there's what many packaging professionals call a pretty major destocking that occurred in 2023. And so that had a negative impact on a number of packaging companies' numbers. So this post-COVID normalization that was really kind of compounded by the destocking phenomenon. We saw a number of companies, both small and large, you know, report lower earnings in 2023 compared to 2022. And then that coupled with a suboptimal M&A market, you know, really caused packaging M&A to suffer. And so, you know, the company performance, that baseline earnings I talked about earlier, is really important, you know, to getting deals done at, you know, kind of a seller and a buyer expectation. And when company numbers trend down, a lot of times deals either don't get done, you know, when they're supposed to, they get put on hold, or there's a delayed launch. So like at our firm, we execute transactions, you know, we're certainly very good at that, but we also do a bunch of upfront planning. And so there were a number of deals last year that we had planned to launch, but we didn't launch because the company performance, you know, didn't support the seller's valuation expectations. And candidly, I think it, you know, the seller would have been, you know, leaving money on the table in terms of selling at a suboptimal time from a company perspective. I could go on and talk about the various end markets, but hopefully, Ron, that gives, you know, you and the listeners just a sense of how, you know, different subsectors, you know, play into the broader picture as it relates to plastics M&A.
Well, I do have a question about plastics packaging. So what role is sustainability playing in plastics packaging? Are companies without a good sustainability message at a disadvantage in the M&A marketplace now?
Yeah, great, great question. Also one that would be difficult to give you a short answer. Sustainability, I'd be surprised if any of the listeners here, you know, didn't have that as a top three priority, weren't familiar with a lot of things that are going on. But sustainability is, you know, really has been around for a long time. And I think we saw an increased focus on sustainability, kind of, I would say, you know, 2017, 2018, 2019, it was really heating up. And then COVID, it took a little bit of a back seat, right? Everybody was focused on COVID and, you know, whether or not you're essential business and how you get people to work, how do you get them to work safely. And I think that, you know, kind of died off. And there was this concern too with, you know, having, you know, sanitary, you know, packaging and not maybe not as much on the reuse side of it, just due to the concerns of spreading COVID. And I think that that kind of lasted for maybe a year, year and a half, and then sustainability has come back, and I would say has come back stronger than ever as a major initiative in the plastics industry. And I think that it's a major opportunity that I see, but it's also a risk factor in any plastic business, because if you don't have a plan for sustainability within the products and say the markets that you're serving, and somebody else does, well, then your business is at risk. And so in when we evaluate a business to help them through a transaction, or when we are evaluating a business, on behalf of a buyer, it's, again, it's one of the top three things that we look at is how sustainable are the products? What markets and customers are they serving? What is important to those customers and markets? And then how does the company's products, stack up to the customer expectation and direction? And I think that different subsectors are more focused on this or more at risk than others. I think, we've all seen what happened to plastic straws and how that's, kind of gone. And, we're certainly seeing that within, some of the disposable tableware industry, but, single use packaging, certainly being attacked. We saw a lot, on the bag market. And so we're seeing some shifts on bags from plastic to paper, and then maybe to more sustainable plastics. But there's a whole side of this of recycling, and I personally think that we have more of a recycling problem than we do a plastics problem. But it doesn't matter what I think; it really matters what the masses think. And so I think that there's a lot of mandates, by major customers and CPGs to put more recycled content, into the products, which I firmly support. There's also been a push to use more sustainable resins or resins that are recyclable. Also support that as well. I think, time will tell how this all shakes out. But I, as I said on the onset, I believe that this creates opportunities for all players in plastics, but it's something that's here to stay, and a sound strategy and sustainability will, help a company become more valuable than one without it.
Okay, John, last question. I seem to have noticed an increased number of deals involving foreign buyers. Is that the case? And if so, why?
Yeah, no, another great question. Something that we're very much tracking. So as part of our not our monthly M&A report, but our annual report, we do report on cross-border activity. And so we look at, foreign to foreign transactions, foreign buyers investing in the U.S., U.S. investing in foreign, and then U.S. to U.S. And in 2023, we saw a pretty dramatic shift in what was a relatively consistent trend. And I think, two things happened in 2023 that I thought were interesting. One is we did see a pretty, sizable uptick in cross-border activity, which, is really no surprise. I think during COVID, we saw less cross-border activity, because of, the issues with travel, particularly international travel. And so that made it tougher to get deals done. I think, what we're seeing right now in manufacturing, which plastics is a lot of manufacturing, is this, what people are calling onshoring. And so you're seeing, there was this mass exodus of business many years ago, to Asia, to China, to lower cost countries. We've seen some shifts to Mexico. But, with some of the supply chain challenges, the you know, there's been a shift of moving things back to the U.S. And so we have certainly seen an increased interest by foreign buyers in U.S. geographies. And we've certainly seen this on a number of our deals where European or Asian or global players are beefing up their presence or establishing a presence in the U.S. because that is a requirement to serve some of the customers that are based in the U.S. and get access to a very strong growing economy. And so we saw an uptick there. But the other piece of the activity last year that was a pretty major change in Ron, I'd love to say that I know the answer exactly as to why this is, but you know, we don't. It's something that we're still investigating. But we did see a very sizable uptick in foreign-to-foreign transactions last year. And so just by comparison, in 2022, we had 137 of the 360 or so transactions in 2022. That jumped up to 184 of the 382 total transactions. And so that sizable jump, you know, when we, you know, we track all these deals, so we track every publicly disclosed deal globally. We categorize it 15 different ways. There's all sorts of databases out there that you can go to, but the databases don't always have accurate information. And that's why we started doing this ourselves over 15 years ago, because we thought it was the only way to get accurate information. So we personally review every single transaction that we report on and categorize it. And so we know that the numbers are sound, but that increase, you know, we don't know if that's a start of a new trend. I think that our analysts and myself think that there might have been some pent-up demand, or pent-up, you know, kind of sellers that maybe would have transacted but didn't, for various reasons, because of COVID, because of, you know, macro issues. And so maybe there's some pent-up demand that drove that higher level of activity. But we don't have, say, a great answer on that. That's actually something that we're still working through right now in preparation for releasing our annual report, which should come out in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Thank you, John. This has been a really great look into Plastics M&A. So our guest today has been John Hart, Managing Director of P&M Corporate Finance in Southfield, Michigan. You can contact John directly through the PMCF website.
Thanks, Ron. It's been great. You know, love to talk more. There's certainly a lot to talk about in Plastics M&A, but this has been great and hopefully helpful to the listeners. You know, give you maybe a summarized version of the complexities and all the things that drive Plastics M&A. So hopefully this was helpful to the listeners.
I hope you have enjoyed this episode of PMM in Person. Thanks to Associate Editor Marvin Brown for editing this podcast. You can always find our podcast and the latest information about the worldwide plastics industry on our website, www.plasticsmachinerymanufacturing.com, and on social media. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcasting app, and please tell a friend or colleague who would enjoy the show. This podcast is produced by Plastics Machinery and Manufacturing, an Endeavor Business Media brand.